A frantic race to find migrant children separated from their parents, and some of them have been sent here to Florida. Welcome to the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is off today, and the nation remains in an uproar over the crisis at the border. Even though the Trump administration has halted its controversial zero-tolerance policy of separating illegal border crossers from their kids, many of those children and toddlers remain in shelters and foster homes across the country right now. More than 2,000 children have been separated from their parents since May, when this policy went into effect. And the U.S. government has done little so far to help with the reunifications, attorneys say. That's prompted a frantic and improvised effort to find the children scattered across the country. Of course, the national outcry has been intense after images were made public from the border showing crying kids locked in cages. In some cases, toddlers, even newborns, being flown to other cities around the country. Meanwhile, Senator Bill Nelson will be in Homestead, Florida, Saturday to visit the Homestead Temporary Shelter for Unaccompanied Children and to speak to some of the 95 kids there who have been separated from their families. Nelson and South Florida Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz were denied entry to that same shelter on Tuesday. After that, he took to the Senate floor. Take a listen.
Why do they not want the senator from Florida to get into this detention facility where there are children that have been separated from their parents? And it must be that not only is this department policy, this is being directed from the president in the White House. And they don't want me to see it because they don't want us to know what is going on in there.
Nelson, of course, is locked in a tight reelection race with outgoing Florida Governor Rick Scott. Meanwhile, Scott's Senate campaign issued a statement accusing Nelson of doing nothing to address the immigration problem. Scott says he'll focus both on family reunification and border security. Now, let's emphasize this Florida connection to this crisis. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, there are more than 1,000 migrant children currently being held at the Homestead shelter, including 94 who were separated from their families at the border. In fact, HHS says there are at least 174 children total who've been separated from their parents, held at facilities around the state. We're going to spend the full hour this Friday on the Florida Roundup discussing the crisis at the border, how states like Florida have become involved, and what we can expect next. Here with more, we welcome Sergio Bustos, who reports for Politico. He joins us via Skype. Sergio, good to have you.
Good afternoon.
Also on the show, Thomas Kennedy with the Florida Immigrant Coalition. He joins the show from WLRN Studios in Miami. Hi, Thomas. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And immigration attorney Susan Pye with me at WJCT Studios in Jacksonville. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Melissa.
And we have a great group here to take all of your questions. Wherever you are in the state, what are your thoughts and comments about the border crisis and Florida's role in housing some of the separated kids? How will the children be reunified with their parents? Will some be permanently separated? What about the issue of border security? Give us a call at 305-995-1800. And Thomas Kennedy, let's begin with you. It's my understanding your organization, the Florida Immigrant Coalition, is going to join others in protesting the zero tolerance policy in Homestead on Saturday. Senator Bill Nelson is also expected to appear there and try to get access to talk to the children. This is all part of a national march to keep families together. Tell us a little bit more about how the Florida Immigrant Coalition is working on this issue as we learn more about the children that are housed here in Florida.
Yes. So, it had come to, so the Florida Immigrant Coalition is a statewide organization composed of member organizations from across the state. So through our membership, we are pretty in touch with what's going on throughout Florida, and through some of our partner organizations, we had heard about this the reopening of this facility in Homestead that was previously holding unaccompanied minors during the Obama administration. I was on a roundtable with Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz earlier this week, where this issue was discussed, and the figure that over 1,000 of these children were being held at this facility, including a small amount of the children that have been separated from their families at the border. And you know, we immediately reached out to our network and our coalition, and through partners, we decided that it was just imperative and important to do something about this and to make a strong statement. And we quickly mobilized as a coalition the partner groups that are going to be there on Saturday, because even though this facility has been called a shelter, we do not believe that it meets the conditions to be called a shelter. It is a detention center where children are incarcerated and imprisoned.
Sergio Bustos, as we see Senator Nelson, the Democratic senator for Florida, being turned away from this facility, the politics of this have played in his favor. He's now up slightly over Governor Rick Scott. Scott has departed from President Trump and saying he's in favor of family reunification, although he's accused the senator of not being strong enough on border security. The politics of this here in Florida, with a large Hispanic population, have been striking to behold. And so how do you see this playing out as this national march is about to get going and Florida politicians are dealing with the headwinds of this crisis?
No, this is really just the beginning of an issue that's going to roll right into the fall elections, these midterm elections. And let me explain why. And it's because this is just the group of kids that are crossing the border and being detained and then being separated. That's one group. But some of the immigration activists in Florida have told us, and it's true, that this is really just part of another looming crisis awaits in the number of what are called temporary protected status holders around the nation. It's about 300,000. The Trump administration ended their – it's a special immigration status given to certain immigrants from certain countries that have gone through some disaster or some major upheaval. And they're allowed to stay in the country for a set period of time. Now, the merits of arguing back and forth, I think, are valid on both sides. However, the Trump administration terminated that program, and these are Haitians, I think Salvadorans, Nicaraguans. That group, from what I can tell, they have American-born children. So they're now also going to be separated once their parents get deported. So this is, to me, just one chapter, the beginning, the opening chapter of what's going to be a very, very contentious and very emotionally driven issue going right into the fall elections.
Going right into the midterms. We'll go to your calls on this here on the Florida Roundup in just a moment at 305-995-1800. Susan Pye, you're an immigration attorney, and you've been following this closely. Whether these are families from Haiti or south of the border in Central American countries, the trauma is the same when you separate a small child from their parent. And we're seeing this unbelievable spectacle of attorneys trying to sort of ad hoc, without government support, try to figure out a way to reunify children with their parents. And so the emotional impact of that has been very upsetting, I think, for millions of Americans to watch. At the same time, there's a lot of confusion about the law and what is actually being done at the border. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah. First, let me say that the underlying core issue, although it's very difficult, you know, to see children separated from their parents, whether surreptitiously or overtly, but we're in the midst of a global migration crisis where 68.5 million people and counting are displaced people all across the world. After World War II, only about 15 million people were displaced. And that's the origination for basically all asylum law and protection across the globe. So although I appreciate congresspeople going to visit these detention centers, there's a particularly bad one that just opened up in Tornillo, Texas, which is really reminiscent of a Japanese internment camp. And it's even I, you know, who have been following the family separation issue for many, many years, I was kind of shocked at seeing, you know, how much like the Japanese internment camps the Tornillo Tent City for Children looks like. And I was even more shocked to discover that the capacity, it just seems like it just turned up overnight, but the capacity for holding children in that facility is 4,000. So, you
and
know.
And we're hearing as well the Pentagon is setting up military bases for as many as 20,000 children in a couple of different states. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's really remarkable, and it obviously took a much longer period of time logistically to plan this out than what appears to the public. For a long time, I've been wondering, and I talked about this on your show before, why Trump wasn't all over Jeff Sessions about his insane plea bargains with people who criminally cross into the United States. You know, people think catch and release is over. It's not. It's just moved from the border to the courtroom. And USA Today just came out with a big story last night or this morning about verifying that, yes, in fact, about over 70% of the thousands of cases that they reviewed show that Sessions is cutting illegal border crossers loose with just 1 to 5 days in jail and a $10 fine. Now I see the reason that Trump wasn't all over Sessions for doing that is because it gave Border Patrol just enough time to spirit away the children from the parents while they were serving out their 1 to 5 days on the criminal reentry or entry without actually physically ripping them apart in front of everybody in immigration detention. So you asked about the law. There are two things going on, and it's really dangerous to add on to the narrative just because of, you know, your outrage. I mean, the truth is bad enough. There's really no need to make it sound worse than it is. But the truth is that people who are claiming asylum legally at the border, they're not being charged with the criminal offense of illegal entry or reentry if they're a repeat offender. It's only when they cross illegally, not through a legal port of entry, that they're being criminally prosecuted. And then again, when they're serving their 1 to 5 days and paying their $10 fine,
that's when the children are taken.
Yes.
All right, let's go to some calls now on the Florida Roundup. It's 305-995-1800. What are your thoughts and questions? Breton is in Port Charlotte. Breton, is that your name? Go ahead.
It's Brenton, but that's okay.
Oh, Brenton. Typo.
That's okay. I had a quick question for your panel. I heard Rick Scott, the governor's comments, Bill Nelson doing nothing, but I was just wondering, couldn't there be something he could be doing as governor of the state to assist with the issue? I mean, he has a vast amount of resources under his state that are available to him.
Yeah.
The DCF and others.
Thanks for that question. Let's go to Sergio Bustos of Politico, covering Florida news here. Sergio, pressure on Governor Scott to act. What about that?
Sure. You know, keep in mind that the immigration is a federal issue.
Right.
So there is limits to what a governor can do. But as you pointed out, working with DCF, making sure those things are done. But I think on a larger scale, perhaps what Governor Scott could do is use this very close personal relationship with Donald Trump. Keep in mind that Governor Scott ran President Trump's super PAC when he was running for president. So they have a close relationship, and I think he could probably do more using that relationship than perhaps what he can do as governor to try to encourage the Trump administration to maybe change its ways.
Marisa is in Miami. Marisa, thanks for your call. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling as a local attorney in Miami, and I am part of the Lawyer Moms of America group. We are heavily invested in this issue, and I just wanted to call and give some information for your listeners who might be wanting to see if there's any way they can help.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so we are a nationwide group. We started less than 2 weeks ago. We've grown to over 15,000 members. We are open to all. We are completely nonpartisan. And basically what we are trying to do is educate people. And on June 29th, we are having a day of action where we are going to all of the legislators' offices across the nation, and we will be delivering a letter regarding this issue. Anyone who wants to help can join us on Facebook, Lawyer Moms of America. From there, they can find their state chapters, and they can see different cities where they can get involved. Like I said, we'll be delivering a letter. We need help spreading the message. We need help with media contacts. Any help that can be given is super appreciated.
All right. Thanks for that. Thomas Kennedy with the Florida Immigrant Coalition. Lots of groups are expressing their frustration about this situation. And of course, President Trump did sign an executive order ending the policy of family separation. But as we're learning from Susan Pye, that's sort of a half step back, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I want to address actually something that was said earlier regarding the ports of entry. So I've heard on this very network from on-site reporting at the border and from other sources, of course, that people at the ports of entry are actually being refused entrance. They're being told that there's overcapacity. They're being turned away. Asylum seekers that are fleeing violence and extreme conditions in their home countries. So it's not so simple as to just go to a port of entry and surrendering yourself and seeking asylum. The administration is actually creating conditions to force people to cross the border without authorization. So that narrative, it's not so simple.
And what do you mean by that when you say they're creating the conditions for them to cross without authorization? What do you mean by that?
That they're making it impossible for people to go to the ports of entry, basically.
I totally disagree with that statement. Yes, the Trump administration is certainly doing what it can to throw wrenches into the system, but it's a really dangerous narrative to incentivize people, whether through the media, organizations, or by what Trump is doing. And by the way, what he's doing is he's having Border Patrol meet people, for example, at airports, at bridges, and telling them to, we're at capacity, you're going to have to come back later. They're not shutting down ports of entry. What I would say as an attorney to my clients, if they were at the border, is you need to sit there and you need to wait until they process you legally. Otherwise, you're going to face criminal charges.
And more to come on this full hour looking at the crisis at the border here on the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition. Lots of people waiting on hold from across the state to have their say. Stay on hold and give us a call at 305-995-1800. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup this Friday, our statewide edition, as we look at the crisis at the border and Florida's role in this, as some of the children that have been separated from their parents are housed in Florida. We're continuing the conversation right now with Sergio Bustos of Politico, Thomas Kennedy of the Florida Immigrant Coalition, and immigration attorney Susan Pye. Lots of calls. Let's go to Frank in Naples. Hey, Frank, you're on the air.
For taking my call.
Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
I got one question is, who is in charge of getting the families back together? Because the only database they have is whatever they created at the ports of entry when the people looking for either asylum or some kind of refugee, they were detained and then the kids were separated. How is it going to be done to guarantee that 100% accurate all the kids are going to be returned to their parents? Because already we see on the news that there are places that they don't know who the parents is for the kids or who the kids belong to.
That's right. Yeah, thank you for that call. And Thomas Kennedy, Florida Immigrant Coalition, the government spent months developing a system to separate families under this new policy, but there does not seem to be any kind of organized system in place to figure out how to reunite all of these children with their detained parents. No system for ICE to pair parents and children off and get them reunited. And we're hearing dire reports of many children who may be permanently lost.
No, there's not. And just how they implemented the Muslim travel ban without any sort of procedure or strategy, it's the same way with this policy. They are completely unprepared. They're completely disorganized. The executive order, going back to the question that you asked earlier, it's completely a manufactured crisis by the president himself. There's no plan, basically. We don't trust the administration. And right now you see that the president is fighting to hold families indefinitely together, trying to reverse the Flores Agreement from the late 90s that says that migrant children can be held past 20 days. And they're even fighting to limit the process of licensing for these children's detention centers. It's absolutely disgusting what they're doing. And it's purely intended to inflict maximum pain on our communities.
Susan Pai, the cost of detention versus maybe putting ankle bracelets on parents and kids. What about that? And also, can you explain, as the immigration attorney here in our group, a little bit more about the Flores agreement or the statute and how that's affecting what's happening right now?
Okay, so I often have to go 4 to 8 hours away traveling to courts to appear for my clients for trial. When I do that, I charge my clients $200 to stay at a hotel and for meals. That's almost exactly the same amount of money that the private prisons like GEO are charging the government to house every man, woman, and child that's held in custody. And right now, we guess it's about $50,000. That's $10 million a day. So there's a huge cost associated, an unnecessary cost. The only reason you put somebody into detention is to guarantee that they'll appear for their court hearing. There's no reason not to slap an ankle bracelet on every person that they have in custody. I don't care if they're pregnant or if they're a teenager. I would much rather the government spend one-tenth of that amount of money and put an ankle bracelet on them to guarantee that they will return to court rather than unnecessarily detaining them and making the CEO of GEO $22 million richer. With regards to the Flores agreement, that's a settlement that was reached by consent decree through Judge Dolly G in California. Now, that basically says that you can't hold minors in custody for immigration detention more than 20 days. Okay, so Trump's solution as a workaround, or Miller's, I should say, as a workaround.
His advisor, Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller, who's really the architect behind all of this. And by the way, it's his lieutenant who's just been appointed to a position that's in charge of all refugees. So, you know, as far as reunifying kids, that's not going to happen. It's never happened. They don't care about it. It's not being prepared. It's they don't care. Even people on the far right, Jessica Vaughn of Center for Immigration Studies has come out and said that, yeah, of course, our government has a responsibility to reunify parents with their children once they're deported. That's even on the extreme right. This government, they don't have any impetus to do that. Okay, so going back to the Flores agreement, so Trump is now, or Sessions is now requesting that the same judge, Dolly G, who said to Obama, you cannot keep minors in custody for over 20 days, to reverse herself. Good luck with that. That's not going to happen. Just like everything in Donald Trump's life, it's just going to legal purgatory. That's where everything's going to end up, in legal purgatory, long after Donald Trump is finished being president of the United States.
Sergio Bustos, as you said, this issue is going to dog the politics of Florida right up into the November midterms. What about the fact that we've got a state full of immigrants? We've now got kids housed in detention centers here in Florida. We are seeing bipartisan outrage about this. We're also hearing about companies profiting off of these detention centers, which has become a new controversy associated with this. How do politicians running for office, not just Rick Scott and Bill Nelson, how do they navigate through this minefield, particularly Republicans in swing districts?
Well, good luck. It is a minefield, but it's a minefield that's been around forever. You know, let me just say this. The entire legal, and I underline legal, immigration system is broken in this country. I want to give you some accurate numbers, but it's roughly, and maybe the attorneys can speak to this at the Florida Immigrant Coalition, but I think roughly the country admits about 1 million to 1.2 million people a year legally in a country of 320 million people. And, you know, folks that want to come here illegally, I'm not saying they want to jump the line, but, you know, they're fleeing all sorts of different human calamities around the world. But one thing I always argue is that, look, both sides are right here. You know, the conservatives are correct. Folks are coming in illegally. They're breaking whatever the rules and regulations of our society, you know, for the border. On the other hand, so are millions of employers, folks who employ folks that come here illegally. And obviously, if they crack down on the employers, my God, there'd be a riot in the country. And there have been occasions where the former INS, used to be called the Immigration and Naturalization Service, when their agents raided workplaces, and I don't care where it was, it drew an immediate outcry from the business owners. So the government never wants to go after the business owners. It's much easier to target this group, more vulnerable. They don't vote. They can't vote. And so I just don't see how you're ever going to tackle this problem, which I see as a major symptom of a larger problem, is you have to solve the legal immigration issue. And the way to do that is to simply adjust the numbers every year depending on the economy. The economy is going well. Mm-hmm. Employers need workers at all levels, by the way, not just higher education ones, but also you need workers. We're growing older as a population. You need folks who can do some of the more physical tasks, you know, in nursing homes and the like. But my point is that system, until it gets fixed, all these problems, and this one is a painful one to watch. But again, as I said earlier, it's just the beginning. When these 300,000 folks, who, by the way, are here legally as TPS holders, temporary protected status holders, and their 273,000-odd American-born children, in other words, U.S. citizens, when those people are when those families are being ripped apart, and they include 28,000 children in Florida, gosh, it will pale in comparison to this problem, because these are folks who are legally, and they're being ripped apart. So mm-hmm. It just seems like until you solve the legal immigration system, that whole broken system, you're going to see this problem emerge again and again.
According to a UN report last year, the United States became the world's leading destination for asylum seekers. And we saw a 44% increase of Central Americans, almost half the total. Lots of calls here coming in to the Florida Roundup. Let's go to Paul in Key West. Hey, Paul. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Well, as usual, much talk. America must reach out and have the equivalent of a Peace Corps program to bring prosperity and stability to Central America. You're not going to stop desperate people from coming. It's like the Mexican president will be saying, looking at this huge wall, Mr. Trump, tear down this wall. It's no coincidence that Europe is experiencing the same immigrants, which they did not have as a problem, till they overthrew Libya, and all of a sudden, it's a non-state, and hundreds of thousands of people flow through Libya to Europe. We are not a fortress alone unless America and Europe reach out to the third world. There'll be a disaster very shortly. It's quite obvious, ecologically, economically.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Paul. And you are correct in that many of the people coming up to the southern border are fleeing drug and gang violence. Thomas Kennedy, Florida Immigrant Coalition. It's been striking to watch the political divide on this in this country, with opponents of the president feeling so much sympathy for parents who they see as trying to protect their children and get them out of a dangerous situation. Supporters of the president more often tend to take the view that people that are coming in are using the children as a way to get in, and that they might not even actually be their own children. It's just been a remarkably contentious conversation taking place in this country over this.
Yeah, that is a disingenuous conversation, because there is Chris Hayes was speaking to a Republican congressman about this, and he challenged him when he made the assertion that MS-13 gang members and terrorists are using children to sneak in the border. And come on, any rational person listening to that right now knows that that's a preposterous statement. He challenged him and he said, listen, give me evidence. Give me evidence, not your talking points. Give me evidence of what you're talking about. And the congressman was completely unable to do so. And we've seen this time and time again. They are unable to own up to their own talking points. You saw Secretary Nielsen, you know, first say that this policy wasn't taking place, then saying that it was taking place. They can't even get their talking points together inside the White House. Yeah, it's absolutely disgusting how they're going now about the issue.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup. It's our statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. Susan Pye, you don't agree with that.
You know, I don't, like I always say, the truth is bad enough. There's no need to say anything more than what the facts are. And the fact is that, yes, people have, since Flores, people have used, that has made a call to migrants south of the border that if you present for asylum in the United States, yes, you should present as a family unit if possible, because under Flores, you'll be cut loose within 20 days of being put into custody, as opposed to being placed in custody for longer. Or you should come as a minor, because then you'll be an unaccompanied minor, and you'll also be cut loose as, you know, under the Flores Agreement. Now, this is just borne out by the statistics. Have people used children to try to cross the border as a family unit? Yes, they have. How do I know that? Because there are convictions that are in PACER, that are in the court records.
And I know it's probably impossible to hazard a guess on this, but what would you say is the percentage of people employing this tactic, as opposed to people who are just genuinely trying to get a better life for their children, a safer life, a more stable life?
Well, I'm not going to hazard a guess. I'll just use, you know, my own experience as an example. So I know lawyers, you know, who take 10, 20 asylum cases a month because people can get work authorization 6 months after they file, and you know, it might take 3, 4, 5, 8 years for them to come to trial on their asylum case. I, however, am not going to take a case unless I know I can win it. I don't know. I don't care what the percentage chance is. If the law and the facts are on my side, then by God, my client should win. I only take 1 to 2 asylum cases a year, but I'll tell you that I get over 50 calls a day.
As of today, according to HHS, there are now 2,458 children under 13 in government care. Let's go to Buck. Buck has been holding. Hi, Buck. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
My question is about infrastructure. I read a piece in the Wall Street Journal this morning that quoted some numbers that were just staggering. 770,000 pending asylum hearings. They're scheduling them to 2021. That doesn't seem tenable to me. Seems unsustainable. And I'm asking your panel, what is the answer? There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of us and them and so on and so forth. This is a national problem that both sides of the aisle face. And I'd love to hear your answer.
Yeah. And Sergio Bustos, House Republicans in Washington tried to vote on an immigration bill to try to move this ball forward. And it went down. It failed.
Yeah. You know, the rallying cry among immigrant activists has always been, si se puede, you know, yes, we can. And frankly, the congressional one has always been, no se puede, or no podemos, we can't do it. I don't know how many times, and this is bipartisan, because when the Democrats are in power, they couldn't do anything. Republicans in power, they can't do anything. It's just one of those, it's got to be one of the most stubborn issues. As to the caller's question, that's really rooted, and the attorney can speak to this, but that's been going on for a long time because there's not enough judges, and the courts along the border especially are just flooded
And there's just not enough judges to handle all those cases. You know, it's as if everyone in Miami started speeding, or were speeding, and then the cops decided to prosecute everyone on the highway. The courts would be overwhelmed. They wouldn't know what to do.
They almost need a rocket docket, it sounds like, that the type of thing that we saw during the financial housing crisis. Even that might not be enough. Susan.
No, that would probably spawn other problems.
That would spawn other problems. Susan.
Yeah, I can tell you exactly what is going to fix this problem. There's only one thing, and that's Congress doing their job. Stop campaigning and start legislating. Now, people will say it is not possible for our current Congress or impending Congress to come together to legislate on immigration. Well, I'm going to give you proof that they can and they will. On September 30th of this year, the notorious Citizenship for Free, EB-5, I think it's a scam program, is set to sunset. Okay, that program was originally supposed to be a temporary program that was originally enacted in 1990. It was supposed to sunset and expire decades ago. Congress has consistently come together to legislate in a bipartisan manner to extend it. Now, they will do it again this year. That's right before midterms. And there's your proof that Congress can legislate on immigration. So I would push them to do so.
And we will take a short break, but continue with your calls for the full hour this Friday on the Florida Roundup as we talk about the crisis at the border and how Florida is housing some of the children that have been separated from their parents. We're going to continue talking with immigration attorney Susan Pye, Thomas Kennedy of the Florida Immigrant Coalition, and Sergio Bustos of Politico, along with your calls here on the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to our Florida Roundup statewide edition this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is off this week, and we're continuing our look at the crisis at the border here for the full hour on the show as we keep talking to Sergio Bustos of Politico, Thomas Kennedy of the Florida Immigrant Coalition, and Jacksonville immigration attorney Susan Pye. Lots of calls. Let's go to Wendy in Fort Myers. Hey, Wendy, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm curious to know how the for-profit prison corporations that manage the detention centers are driving policy.
Thanks for that. The for-profit prison industry, Thomas Kennedy, certainly that's a big player here in Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they've been major contributors to Governor Rick Scott in the past. And we're actually partnering up with other organizations such as the Dream Defenders, New Florida Majority, Organized Florida, SEIU, other partners around the state to actually put forward something that we call the Freedom Pledge that actually asks candidates to not take any more money from Geo Group, which is one of the main private prison companies here in Florida, and also the NRA. And we've had a good amount of success having candidates sign it. We've had people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Charlie Crist, Shavreen Jones, candidates like Debbie Mugersell Powell, David Richardson, Mari Barcy Flores, all four gubernatorial candidates on the Democratic side to take this pledge to not take any money from this industry and not support it in any way, shape, or form. Because I just want to make it very clear and very simple to the audience. Profiting off of the liberty of human beings is morally wrong. It's evil, and it needs to stop.
And let's go to Rick in Northport. Rick, I know you've been holding a little bit. Thanks for holding. Go ahead. Oh, did we lose Rick? Well, the point he wanted to make was that refugees or illegal immigrants are choosing to cross the border illegally and that they're making a choice and that they should know the consequences of that choice.
Undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, I'm sorry, undocumented immigrants. I was just reading what he said while he was waiting on hold, but thank you for that. Susan Pye, what about that argument?
So it's interesting. The whole foundation of not just our asylum protections, but asylum laws all across the world are rooted in the 1951 post-Holocaust definition of refugee. That is fundamentally, as an international community, no longer strictly applicable. So most people who are not just crossing into the United States, but most of these almost 87 million people who are now displaced, they are not within the strict definition of the 1951 post-Holocaust definition of refugee, nor are they coming for purely economic reasons. They're coming for some reason in between, and that is termed by an academician in the UK as survival migration. And so the crux of the entire world's system of asylum needs to move from that 1951 definition, and the core underlying issue with regards to the global migration crisis needs to be addressed as an international community.
Joe is in Port Charlotte. Hello, Joe. You're on the Florida Roundup. Okay, we lost Joe. Let's try Laura in Pembroke Pines. Hey, Laura, are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay,
go ahead. Yeah, so I really have to make a couple of points because I myself am an immigrant. I came when I was 12. I experienced violence growing up. My mom was kidnapped. We went through so much, and it really hurts me to hear even people in this panel, you know, sometimes refer to us as illegal and use that word so often because it's leading to even young children now being in cages and being called illegal. And it's just really disappointing. And then I just think, I mean, somebody mentioned about, you know, it not being intentional from the Trump administration to deny access at the port of entry. And I think that's naive or disingenuous to think that because they said that they don't want to be in this country. I mean, they call us animals, they call us rapists, and then for you not to think that they want to do that to us, I mean, I don't know if I believe that. And I think that if you are a person who's not coming with a lawyer and you come and they tell you to go away and you don't feel safe, you're going to try your best to find safety, and that's crossing the border. But besides making the point, I did want to ask about what's the role of Mayor Jimenez and the commission, you know, having basically been working with ICE, and what's their role now that we found out about this detention center? Thank you so much for taking my call. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura. And I hear the anguish in your voice. And the rhetoric around this has been extremely painful, and not just for people who've had your life experience. Sergio Bustos, the president, tweeting that immigrants coming in are infesting this country. The word infest in particular, describing human beings as, in effect, vermin. How can politicians in this swing state distance themselves from that kind of rhetoric in this kind of climate? It's just unbelievable rhetoric. I don't know how else to put it.
No, the rhetoric's been there. And, you know, even before Trump, you know, the immigration debate would always draw some extremes, you know, several extremes, especially on the right, but also on the left. I mean, like I said earlier, you know, everyone's kind of right here, but no one seems to want to find the solution to it, be it Congress or the White House. And the language, the rhetoric only fuels the kind of the differences, as opposed to trying to find some commonalities. And the final thing I say, politically, I think at the end of the day, you know, there was just a poll out of even Republicans in Florida that found the number one issue was immigration. Whether you are against it, in support of it, there is one thing that can be done come November, and that's to go vote. And let your voice be heard. And if you are angry over this detention of children at the border and all over the country, if you're angry about the termination of TPS holders, or you're in favor of it, that the program should be ended, and there are valid arguments, then go and vote and tell your lawmakers how you feel. At the end of the day, that's what's got to happen.
It's the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition here on Florida Public Radio. Thomas Kennedy, as Sergio pointed out, engagement at the polls, I think this year will be higher than usual for an off-year election, both on the left and the right.
Yeah, absolutely. People are completely disgusted with what's going on. But I actually want to address the caller Laura's question at the end of her at the end of what she said regarding the Miami-Dade Commission and Mayor Jimenez's policy. First of all, I want to congratulate the people of Commission District 5 for electing Eileen Higgins as their new commissioner, who has been a longstanding community advocate and has spoken against the immigration detainer policy here in Miami-Dade County on numerous times. This is a policy that we have been working in since its inception. We released a report called The Cost of Complicity that basically outlines, and it's actually shown in the numbers of the county, that it's cost $13 million to taxpayers in Dade to hold people an extra 48 hours after they have completed their time in county jail for them to be picked up by federal immigration agencies. And this is a policy that has been ruled unconstitutional, that has been ruled by judges that the Trump administration cannot withhold funds from municipalities that do not comply with holding people indefinitely for ICE. So we call on Mayor Jimenez and the Miami-Dade County Commission to do everything in their power to reverse this policy right away, because family separation doesn't only just happen at the border. It's happening inside our communities, and it's happening right here in Miami-Dade County. And Mayor Jimenez went to that shelter in Homestead to try to politic around the issue. Mayor, you have power to do something about this. Do
All
it.
All right. And
change
let's
the policy.
Close, let's close with Susan Pye, just a minute or two left in the show. What we can expect as the legal process plays out on this issue.
I mean, the Trump administration is extremely vindictive towards sanctuary cities or anybody who tries to resist for or not honor, for example, immigration detainers. And there's sort of a mutually symbiotic relationship where law enforcement, who can't necessarily build a case against an alleged gang member, but who they want to be out of their community, they absolutely will cooperate with immigration and give them access to what we call CopLink in Florida, in order to make it so easy for immigration to pick those people up and deport them out of the country, because that civil process is much easier than building a criminal case. As far as what we can expect going forward legally, it's just going to be like Donald Trump's life. Everything is going to end up in legal purgatory. Dolly G, the judge in California, she's not going to reverse her own decision. So everything is just going to remain in limbo until we hold legislators accountable to do their job.
Ultimately, it's on Congress.
Correct.
Yes. And as all three of you have pointed out, that's a whole different kettle of fish. And we have not seen any success on resolving the legalities of this in the Congress for years. And as the pressure mounts, we will continue to follow this on this program. And I want to thank all three of you so much for this hour-long discussion, and all of the callers as well who came in from all across the state of Florida. Thank you so much, Sergio Bustos of Politico, Thomas Kennedy of the Florida Immigrant Coalition, and North Florida immigration attorney Susan Pye. Thanks for your insights and your comments on this very, very important and emotional issue for America and Florida. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Kevin Murchard is our producer. Jason Zabka is our technical director. WLRN's program director is Peter Mertz. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.